stock formula?
Your Honor, they did. I think that statement actually was made in connection with counsel's statement that his understanding was that it had been produced, and we cited the cases, including a case from this court, that understanding is not personal knowledge. There is no evidence with any personal knowledge that this formula has ever been disclosed anywhere else.
No, it wasn't a disclosure. The point he was making that Bridgestone makes a point that no court, there's no record of any court having ordered this to be produced.
Right.
And his comment was, well, there's no record of that because the moment the court says they're going to order production, that particular case gets settled.
Right. Well, Your Honor,
and the production didn't pass. So I was just asking if you agree
with
that.
Justice Enoch, I'm not aware of that. It's not my understanding. There's no evidence in this record of that. Certainly the formula has never been turned over.
I'm confident of that.
Yes, sir. Going to the Continental Tire case analysis, the first step in the analysis is that that it is established that the formula is a trade secret. So we move to the second step, which on our poster is the red step, where the burden shifts to the plaintiff, here the plaintiff, to adduce evidence to establish that disclosure of the trade secret is necessary for fair adjudication. Now, what does necessary for fair adjudication mean? In the Continental case, the court held that necessary to fair adjudication is a heightened burden of proof, and it's more than mere relevance. So on our spectrum, we start in the blue area with information that's useful in the sense that it might lead to relevant evidence. Then you go up higher, you get to evidence that's actually relevant and probative, and then finally, above that, you have evidence that is necessary to the litigation.
What does necessary to the litigation mean?
That, Your Honor, that's exactly the question that we're here on today. And some of the courts that have addressed it are excerpted in tab 2 of our poster booklet. There's two cases in particular that this court relied on heavily in Continental Tire. One is this court's decision in automatic drilling, and the other is a California court's decision in the Bridgestone case, where that court said that necessary means necessary to the proof of the plaintiff's cause of action.
But does that mean that the plaintiff has to say, my case would be disposed of as a matter of law. I have no case to put on if I don't have this evidence. Do they have to go that far?
They have to prove that they need it to make out a case. Yes.
Well, does that mean they have to say, I have no other proof but this, so let me have this, otherwise I can't do it?
They have to say they have no other proof that would permit them to make out a cause of action. And
so this is a pretty risky move on the part of a plaintiff to go into court and say, if I don't get this proof, then I can't go forward with my case, because the next thing you're going to do is come in with your summary judgment motion and you're going to say they're out of here because they didn't meet. So this becomes dispositive of the case.
You're balancing two competing interests.
No, I understand, but your view of necessary means
right.
It becomes dispositive of the case.
Yes, Your Honor.
Couldn't there be another view of necessary, though? Would you agree that since cases are about persuading,
right,
that it's not just a matter, and we certainly like cases if we are either defending or prosecuting them, in which we have multiple pieces of information to put
right
to the jury, because the more we can say to the fact finder, the more likely we are to persuade.
Yes, Your Honor. That's right, and that's
what you don't get that option in a case involving trade secrets.
I think you're talking about relevance. I think relevant information, all the relevant information you have that's otherwise admissible, and I'm talking about a trade secret privilege which has its own value to be protected, which I have to establish that it's really a trade secret. And the case before Your Honors is a case where it's established that it's really a trade secret. That's a special kind of thing.
Lead me to my question about that. Is this additional step over relevance, is the heightened burden higher than getting at attorney work product privilege, which you can under rule? Is this burden trade secret a due to a greater protection than work product privilege of the attorney, or the same protection as work product
privilege?
Your Honor,
it's probably analogous because, you know, fraud, for example, is an exception for work product, and the 507, the rule on trade secret, of course, talks about except for fraud and where necessary for fair adjudication, you don't get the trade secret. So we're probably talking about...
Well, the rule 192, I don't know which point it is, talks about that there are certain work attorney-client privilege is not discoverable. Attorney-client mm-hmm. materials. Mm-hmm. Core work product of the attorney is not discoverable.
Right.
But there is work product that is privileged, mm-hmm. but you meet a certain standard.
Right.
You can get that information.
Right. And
so you're saying this is really what we're talking
right.
about.
Right, that's the analogy, because in the Continental Tire case, the court rejects the notion that there's an absolute trade secret privilege and allows for situations where you meet this burden of proof to get it.
But the good cause exception under the work product doctrine is a little bit less than the necessary standard.
Okay, I think that's probably right, Your Honor. I didn't say they're equivalent.
I think it's analogous.
But I think this case is really easier. It's really easier than what you're struggling with, because you have to look at the evidence that these plaintiffs put on. And there's only two affidavits. There are only a few pages in the record. It's the affidavit of expert Ox and the affidavit of expert Carlson.
But as I understand it, under your definition of what evidence is necessary, you contend that the fact that the plaintiff's experts have also said that they can study the tires themselves.
Right.
To make the determination
right.
basically puts them out of the ballgame. That it doesn't really matter what else they said. It matters that they said we can also get there another way.
Your Honor, you can dispose of it before you reach that point. I think that's true.
Under your theory of necessary,
yes,
isn't that right?
That's right. But I think you can dispose of it without reaching that issue if you look at their affidavits, because the affidavits don't say the evidence is necessary. The affidavits say the evidence is relevant and it's probative. And they say, here's why. This is what's so important. Here's why it's relevant. Here's why it's relevant. It's relevant in that they want to compare what's supposed to be in a tire with what material is actually found in the failed tire. This is why they say they want the skim stock formula. And they don't tell you, they don't tell the court, that they have to have the skim stock formula to make this comparison. If you look at their exact language...
What does best way mean compared to necessary?
Well, that's exactly where I'm going. If you look at the language in their affidavit, they say the best way to decide what's supposed to be in the tire is to have the formula. Now, the reason that experts Carlson and Ott say that's the best way is that they know it's not the only way. So you see, on the face of their affidavits, they're conceding that it's not the only way. And let me show you another way to look at that, and that is our experts show, and this is not disputed by Ott and Carlson, because after all, they say looking at the formula is only the best way to know what's in the tire. We say that you can compare if you're looking for contaminants, which is what they're looking for, that you can compare the failed tire to other finished tires and say, look, you know, there's something in the failed tire that's not supposed to be there.
But why does what your experts say make any difference? This is an abuse of discretion standard.
Right.
And if we've got conflicting evidence, then, I mean, if they've met the necessary standard, the fact
right.
that your experts may have said something different doesn't make any difference, because
okay,
it would
Honor,
be within
look,
the discretion.
Look what their experts say.
I understand, but I'm just trying to understand how this is going to work.
All right.
Under the abuse of discretion standard, mm-hmm. if they really did meet the necessary standard, and mm-hmm. you came back with your experts saying,
right.
no, that's really not necessary,
right.
and here's why, and the trial
right.
judge chose to believe their experts,
mm-hmm.
then game over, because we've got an abuse of discretion standard, and it would be up to the trial court to decide.
Right, Your Honor, but that's not this case.
I understand, but just I'm trying to understand the implications
okay.
for all this.
Mm-hmm.
If that is the case,
right.
then in fact we would not overturn a trial court's decision.
If there was evidence that met the step of necessary for the adjudication,
right.
then you would be in a different scenario. But our position here on this mandamus is that they don't have that evidence, and on the face of their own affidavits, they don't have the evidence, because they say the best way to decide what's in the tire is to look at the skim stock, and they don't say the only way to know what's in the tire or supposed to be in the tire is the skim stock. And if you go back to the two cases that this court relies on, the NRA Continental, that are excerpted at tab 2, in automatic drilling, that's a case from this court that is cited with approval in Continental. This court said it has to be necessary to the litigation and unavailable from any other source. And our position is, when their experts say the best way to know what's in the tire, they're conceding that it's available, i.e., it being what's in the tire, is available from other sources.
What if, though, it is tied? I understand that there's some debate on whether there's an allegation in this case that there may have been some sort of cost cutting that led to a formula using inferior ingredients. And then if we talk about the best way is to, we got to know what's in it if we're going to determine if there was cost cutting. I know that there's also questions about the manufacturing process.
Right.
But there may be a theory in this case that there was cost cutting associated with the ingredients being inferior at the front end.
Right.
doesn't that present a different issue and a different analysis?
No, because they still would have to have evidence that they needed the skim stock formula, that it was necessary for them to demonstrate the defect at the front end in order for the cost cutting to have any relevance. And that's what they're lacking here, Your Honor. See, what they don't do is they don't come into court because they can't, because it's not true. They don't come into court and assert in their expert affidavits or otherwise that they need this formula in order to opine that the tires are defective. They couldn't, of course, because in hundreds of these cases across the country, their experts have been opining all over the place that these tires are defective without the skim stock formula. And in the California Bridgestone case at tab 2, the court said, in order to show necessary for the adjudication, the expert must show how the formula is a predicate to the expert's ability to reach his conclusions. And these experts are telling the court, we don't need it to reach our conclusions, but we'd like to have it. That's what they're saying. And if you read their affidavits, that's what's so fascinating, because first they admit there's another way to figure out what should be in the tire, and then they go on to say, I'd like to have it. They say, I'd like to see it, to see if they reveal further information regarding the tires. And that kind of evidence on your spectrum here is down in the blue.
Just to be clear, they admit that there's another way, and your basis for saying that is because they say the best way,
right.
which assumes that there's another way.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the fact that there is other evidence in the record that they don't refute that there is other ways. And that's what I was getting to with my fire chart, where I was trying to demonstrate that their own expert, Mr. Ox, admits repeatedly in deposition and admits in his affidavit that the tire curing process chemically changes some of the ingredients. That's the vulcanization process. So what we've said all along is, why do you want the skim stock formula? The skim stock formula is a chemical composition that is changed through vulcanization. And then you get to a completed tire. And the completed tire, which of course is the rubber that really hits the road, the completed tire is what the chemical composition is really supposed to look like in a finished tire. And so that's why we have said that's the better comparison. But, you know, I don't care whether my comparison is better or his is better. It doesn't matter. The point is there's at least two comparisons that can be made, and therefore they don't meet the standard under automatic drilling from this court that there's no other way for them to make this out. It's also interesting what's not in the affidavits.
How does this work at trial?
Mm-hmm.
Seems like it'd be real easy to open the door.
Mm-hmm.
And when that's happened in the past, has the case just settled?
Your Honor, what we say, and we said it in the trial court, and I'll say it today, we're perfectly willing to have an in limine order that says we're not supposed to say that our formula is not defective or is great or anything like that, that we're not supposed to mention the formula.
Well, no, but I'm not talking about your mentioning it or
right.
relying on it in any way, but in picking apart their expert,
right.
I could see how you would try to say, well, but you're picking holes in their theory when they have said the best way is to do it this way.
Right.
So it would seem to me at trial it would be fairly easy to open the door on it, and I just didn't know if that's happened.
Your Honor, put up the pie chart, we have. But the truth of the matter is, if you look in our record, we provide for you the excerpts from their various depositions, excerpts from their reports, where they show you how they prove defect. And that's what my pie chart's trying to show. I'm trying to address your point that they can easily go into defect without opening the door, because they do it in all these cases. And
no, I'm talking about you opening the door.
Well, if
on cross-examination.
Your Honor, if I open the door, then we've left ourselves open to that argument as far as the formula. But we don't believe that's our whole point here. Because it's not necessary to adjudicate these cases, we don't need to open the door.
Is it also then appropriate if you prevail under this particular rule and keep the skin stock formula from being disclosed that you could be limited at trial from cross-examining their witnesses at all in a way in which would imply that their work is incomplete or they haven't done things the best way because they haven't looked at your skin stock formula?
I think that might, but if you add that, because they haven't looked at the
right.
skin stock,
no, I'm just
then
saying
I think
that. In other words, I understand if they're sitting there saying this is the best way and they'd like to see it, and you all have the information.
Right.
You have information that you could use against them at trial.
Right.
So you would say that another step of this would be it would appropriate for the trial judge to grant a motion in limine to prevent cross-examination that could go back to this particular
with respect
issue.
To the skin stock.
Right.
But when you look at all the other different ways they're going to prove defect.
I'm just talking about skin stock.
We'll have lots of ways
well,
to prove
well,
it.
Let me ask you
again,
about defect. I'm sorry. Let me talk about defect. I suppose there's any manner of way that the manufacturing process could be defective. But it seems to me there's any manner of way the design process could be defective.
Yes, sir.
And
the design, this is just a chemical reaction.
Right.
So the design could be the composition of the chemicals, could it not?
It could, Your Honor, on the other
hand. So if I allege there's a design defect
in
the tire, and that necessarily, under any chemical composition scenario, that's going to be a trade secret by the manufacturer.
No,
you're complaining about the design, there's a trade secret.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get the trade secret if you can prove quote, defect.
Right.
But how do they prove a design defect if that's their complaint?
The same way they've done it in all the matters that are in our record, if you'll just read it, Your Honor. They look at the properties of the tire that a tire should have, like adhesion or elasticity. And they examine the tire and they say that that's the expert examining and testing the failed tire. They compare it to other tires. And they look at the root cause studies, all of which have been done without the skim stock formula. So they look at this massive universe of tires and they say tires should have these properties, elasticity, adhesibility, that kind of thing. And they say this tire does not. And they look at the failure of the tire. And this is what these experts have done in these cases. They look at the way the tire failed.
And so the jury is free to infer that the chemical composition must have been wrong.
They don't go that far. If they were going that far, their affidavits would be different here. They are able to get to defect.
Well, Bridgestone takes the position that one of the reasons the skim stock is not important in this case is because tires cannot be reverse engineered.
Right,
you can't melt the tire down and determine what the original formula was.
Because of vulcanization, yes, Your Honor.
But do scientists agree that, I mean, is it commonly accepted that because it cannot be reverse engineered, the original formula plays no role in the design of the tire?
No, Your Honor. The real reason that we brought up you can't reverse engineer is to prove trade secret. Because obviously if you could reverse engineer, you could go down to the Firestone store and buy a tire and figure out what the formula was.
But the flip side of it is, doesn't that raise the level of this, the notion of the best evidence of a design defect if everybody concedes that simply looking at the failed tire or even a brand new tire will not reveal one of the significant design characteristics of the tire, which is the chemicals that are used to and the ratio of these chemicals to that tire? And the person that the experts are saying, we can prove any number of defects about the tire, but there's one significant component in the design process of this tire that is the chemical mixture that they use, which is not available to us under any circumstance, and Bridgestone agrees. You can do anything you want to this tire, but we agree it will not reveal one of the significant design characteristics of the tire, which is chemicals.
Judge, keep in mind that their own expert, Mr. Ox, while he admits that the ingredients are changed, claims that it's very relevant to him to know what the formula was anyway, even though he admits you can't reverse engineer. The finished tire has chemical components and properties. You can take a finished non-defective tire and analyze the heck out of it and know all of what its chemical properties are. And that tells the plaintiff's experts a whole bunch. And if you look at the root cause studies...
But it doesn't reveal the design characteristics of the chemical.
But, Your Honor, you're assuming that they need to know that in order to show defect. And all the root cause studies, which have all been done without the formula...
Maybe I make a distinction between to show a defect and to show a design defect when one of the significant design components is not available for them, and the admission that no matter how much work they put on the tire, they will never find the design components.
Judge, this skim stock formula is used in all our passenger tires. It's the same skim stock formula for every passenger tire, not just the tires in this litigation. Nobody is here asserting that every Firestone tire is defective. You see, that's why they really don't need the formula. Because they are able to determine what's wrong with this particular line of tires, just like it's been done in all the root cause analyses that have been done by Ford and Firestone and Dr. Fabinge and the National Highway Safety without the formula, by the methods that we've talked about, by testing the tire, by comparing it to other tires, by testing the universe of return tires, by doing other laboratory tests on the chemical components without having the trade secret. So yes, would it be nice to have the trade secret? Maybe, you know, if you wanted to have every piece of relevant evidence, but that's the point of the continental standard. You see, you have to weigh how bad do they really need that formula against the fact that it's a trade secret. You know, the other companies never revealed their formulas. They don't have somebody else's formula to go compare my formula to. because these are all trade secrets.
Have your experts ever taken the position that the failures were caused by a combination of events that science currently can't figure out?
No, I don't think that's our position, Justice Owen. They do take the position that there are a combination of factors that have to come together to cause these accidents, like the degree of inflation of the tire, the heat, how high the climate is, how we have, that's why we have more of these accidents in the southern states. There are a number of factors that come together, including one of the things they pointed out is the manufacturing process in the Decatur plant, which, by the way, is also a trade secret, but Judge Mays let them have that, and we didn't dispute that on mandamus. So these folks have been through the manufacturing process in the Decatur plant. The very thing that the root cause studies point to is the problem. They've seen. They have all that evidence. So that's the point here. They've got all kinds of evidence in this case. They don't need this. And you know, Justice Enoch, you started with the point about it settles when you order. That's really the fairness factor that I think we ought to look at, how it skews the litigation, because they want to get your trade secret. And if they can get your trade secret, boy, that puts a real onus on a defendant to want to settle. It sure does. And think about how that skews the litigation in a situation such as this where they have not met their burden to prove they really need it for a fair adjudication of their case. And my time is up.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from Ms. Conley.
Thank you.
I want to thank the court very much for having granted us oral argument on this issue, because I think this case is one of historical significance for not only Texas but for the rest of this nation. Texas, unfortunately, was one of the hardest hit states for this tragedy. This is a product recall involving 19 million tires, the ATX and Wilderness tires that were manufactured by Firestone. Hundreds, perhaps thousands of deaths and injuries have been associated and attributed to these tires as they fail in use on the highways of this country. It is the largest recall of tires in American history. And yet Firestone contends that this tire is still deserving of protection.
What do you think necessary for a fair adjudication means? What's
Your Honor,
position on that?
That's a question that I think we have to look at DuPont versus Robinson for an answer and for guidance, because this is a standard that this court has struggled with before, is how do we raise the standards for expert testimony to make sure that we have a fair presentation of the evidence to the jury so that they aren't missing valuable pieces of the litigation puzzle. And DuPont versus Robinson, they say that you have to look at the methodology of the expert. He has to be able to exclude other causes of the problem. Are we going to take the best evidence away from that expert? Are we going to not allow him to have a critical piece of the design puzzle and then present him to the jury?
I'm unclear from your brief. You say on the one hand, we have opinion evidence of defect. And then in another place in your brief, you say we can't prove our case without this formula. And then in a third place, you say, well, we don't really have to say one way or the other. So I'm not clear what your position is on how important this has to be.
Well, Your Honor, I think it is extremely important because of fairness and because of assembling all the pieces of evidence. And I think it goes back to Justice Hankinson's question earlier about, do we withhold this piece of evidence? Do we make the lawyer and the witness come into court and say, I'm sorry.
So we still have to, I mean, I think Justice Heckner is asking the same question. What does necessary for a fair adjudication mean? What do you have to prove? What standard do you have to meet in order to be able, under Continental Tire, to access this information? I mean, I understand you're talking all the policy reasons behind it. Ms. Yates says it really has to be the only way. What do you think it means?
Well, I would go back to the opinion that was written by Judge Mays, in which he weighed the interest of the parties, the risk of the harm to Firestone versus the particularized need of the plaintiffs for this information. I think he made a very reasoned and well-founded analysis of the issue, considered the conflicting affidavits from the experts, and came to the opinion that in the fairness analysis...
Okay, but let's say I have to write the opinion in this case, because someone else is going to be looking at it, and they're going to want to know in a hearing, the next time this issue comes up, what their proof needs to look like. What am I going to say in this opinion about your proof that met the Continental Tire standard?
I think that...
How am I going to describe it? What am I going to say about it?
Well, if I turn to the affidavits of our experts, first of all, they give the opinion that they believe that there's a rubber compounding problem with Firestone ATX and Woodard's tires. I did not see that level of proof in any of the other cases that the defendants have cited, which courts have held that this should not be produced.
Well, why do they think that? Don't they think that because they can look at the tire that failed and say that it didn't hold together the way it should?
Well, that's a very good question, Justice Ack, and I think that there's other evidence out there. If you look back at what Ford did, and there is a great deal of evidence in the trial record, we attached Tim Davis, who's the head of quality control at Ford. The investigations that Ford did in their root cause identified problems with the skim stock compound. In fact, the Firestone Ford engineers, when they met on this issue in July or August of 2001, voted on what they consider to be the top 10 possibilities for problems with these tires, and compounds was identified in the top 10 possibilities. And the Ford testing confirmed several problems with these compounds, a higher cross-link density in the compound, but they also identified high levels of sulfur in the compound, much higher than in competitors' tires.
But when you say in the compound, you mean in the vulcanized tire. When you take the failed tire and look at it, those are problems that you think it has. The experts think.
No, not only us, but Ford.
Yeah.
Not only us, but Ford, John.
But what does that have to do with the formula? What difference does it make what the formula was as long as that's the end result?
Because that goes back to the initial design of the tire. Are they using more sulfur in the tire because it's a cheaper additive to use in the tire than using some other necessary material?
I guess my problem is I don't understand what difference it makes if they are or they aren't, if the reason the tire failed is... it's got too much sulfur.
Well, I think then that question raises, are all of these tires suspect? Is the entire universe of these tires suspect? Even though these tires have been recalled, they have not admitted that all these tires are defective. In fact, they contend in their affidavit submitted to this court that there are a variety of other reasons why these tires can fail in service. What they don't want us to do is to get back to that basic design element, that basic building block of the tire, and to be able to say that the formula itself is intrinsically flawed.
Can an expert look at one of these tires that has too much sulfur in it and determine why there's too much sulfur in it?
My understanding is that they cannot. It could be a contaminant in the process. It could have been an initial ingredient in the manufacturing
they
process.
They just know there shouldn't be excessive sulfur or shouldn't be any or whatever.
Yes.
Well, I guess I'm confused. If some of the tires don't have an excess sulfur product and some do, and they were all made at the same time at the same company, that indicates that it's not a formula problem, doesn't it?
Well, I don't think we've examined the whole universe of the tires. My understanding is that Ford routinely identified in these tires a higher than normal sulfur content across the manufacturing process. Wasn't just in one tire.
Higher than normal as compared to other tires, as compared to these tires. What is normal?
What is normal?
You're saying higher than normal. What do you mean by
higher normal? Than the competitor's tires and higher than what Ford would have expected?
But you don't know the competitor's formulas, though. So
that's
the only way you can compare is by the post-vulcanized comparison, and that's apples to oranges.
Well, the tire industry has done a very good job of aggressively pursuing this issue. In fact, I think that almost every one of these cases that have been cited this court have been tire cases, and Mr. Moran, who's the attorney who argued for Firestone and before Judge Mays, was the attorney who argued in almost every one of these cases. The tire companies have taken a position that, which I think is a mousetrap argument, that you can never have this formula unless you come in and say that you have no proof otherwise.
Well, you say at one point, the only way that Firestone's defenses can be rebutted successfully is through discovery of the compound formula. Is that your position? I mean, you're going to lose this case if you don't discover these formulas.
Your Honor, I'm not saying that we're going to lose this case.
What does that sentence mean? I'm quoting from you.
What I'm saying is this, is that and this is something that's very important. Ms. Yates continued to talk about the investigations that Ford and Firestone had done. The Firestone root cause investigation, they had this material available to them. And the affidavits that they gave to the courts, they say there's nothing wrong with the skim stuff because we did our investigation. There's nothing wrong with it. Trust us. Trust us and accept our opinion without allowing anyone else to do an examination to verify
did
that.
Did Ford get to use the skim stock formula in its evaluations?
It's my understanding that Ford did not have that available.
Now, are you saying that the formulation that we have in the California court has had about what's necessary to get a trade secret is flawed, or at least it's got to be bent in a case where the damages are high enough? Or do you just say that the way we have articulated the test is right and you meet that articulation?
Your Honor, I think that the test that you articulated in Cunningham and Joint Retire is a very good test. Okay. And I think it relies upon the trial judge to do the very balancing that he did between the risk of harm.
So you say Continental's right and Judge Mays followed Continental?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that's true.
Okay, well, under Continental, how does this... You were making all these arguments about it's the largest recall,
yes,
all the damages, and all the people that are injured. How does that enter into our Continental test?
Well, Your Honor, in every one of these cases that I'm aware of that have been cited by Firestone, in which courts have denied this, it's been an isolated incident involving a tire. We know that in this situation, where there's smoke, there's fire. They would not have recalled 19 million tires unless something was intrinsically wrong. We know from the number of tires that both of these experts who have given affidavits on the plaintiff's behalf have looked at that there is a problem with the compounds, the glue that holds these tires together. And we know that from their own reports that they have identified a problem.
But see, if you know that, I don't see what else you're going to know by having the formula.
We're going to know, Your Honor, whether that formula itself is flawed intrinsically. And there's another issue I'd like to address very quickly, which is there are cases that are pending in which there is no tire available for examination or analysis. And it is my understanding that Firestone has filed a motion for summary judgment in those cases on the basis that there is no tire available. And it's not due to the fault of the plants. It's usually what happened. These accidents occurred before the recall was announced. Insurance companies may have taken the vehicle and destroyed the tire when they scrapped the vehicle. And without knowing that formula, in those cases, there is no evidence.
So you're saying that could be an instance, not our instance, but it could be an instance in which it's the only way.
It is an instance before this court because this is the consolidated proceedings that govern all the cases in Texas. So those cases are before this court as well. There were over 150 cases that were consolidated together in these Rule 11 proceedings.
You say this is all the cases in Texas, or is it all the cases in the second administrative region?
No, Your Honor, this order applies to all of the cases in Texas. Judge Mays, what would happen, he would have a hearing, and then he would discuss with the other judges his recommendations and findings, and then an order would be entered across the entire
state. So all the consolidated judges, whoever they are, have signed on to this?
That's my understanding.
Is there, if the tire is not available, is there any other way to prove a defect in the tire? What are they going to tell me is going to be their alternative avenue for you to pursue for that sort of thing?
I'm sorry, what is Farson going to tell you just as a no?
Yes.
Farson is going to tell you it should be a summary judgment case and it should be dismissed.
Well, I suspect that Ms. Yates probably won't tell me that. She's probably going to tell me that the root studies will still get you there without the tire.
Your Honor, that's not the position they have taken. I know that this motion for summary judgment was granted on this very issue in the NDL pursuit before Judge Barker in Indianapolis because the tire was not available. Firestone, that is what concerns me, is that the defendant comes in and says, please trust us. The formula isn't bad. We've looked at it, no one else can look at it, and we assure you that it's not bad. But yet we can use this aggressively and offensively, this privilege, which I don't believe is proper. That's why privileges have to be closely construed, because they do tend to hide and conceal information.
But I don't hear them to be saying either thing. I don't hear them to be saying, trust us. I hear them to be saying, it doesn't matter to your case. You've got the proof or you don't have the proof. And what difference does it make if the glue won't hold the steel together, whether it's because they heated it at the wrong temperature, or they used a chemical they shouldn't have, or they omitted some chemical. If it won't hold together, it won't hold together.
Well, they do not admit that, though, Your Honor, in these cases. They fight that issue. I mean, they would like to come in and admit to this court that there are millions of tires are defective. They don't. They fight every one of these cases. They contend that they are not defective.
Right.
So we need all the evidence that is available to us to prove that they are defective. And design defect is one of the issues that we have put in these cases. And the question I would have, what is the risk of harm to Firestone on this issue if these tires have been recalled? And I have to disagree with Ms. Yates. It is not my understanding that this is a skim stock that's used in every one of their passenger car tires. I do not believe that is a correct statement.
And how do you know that?
Because I have seen the internal Firestone documents. I spent all of last year in depositions with these defendants. Mr. Lampe is CEO of the company, engineers throughout the company, the Ford engineers. I took Tim Davis's deposition, his head of quality control at Ford. I do not believe this is a skim stock that's used in every other passenger tire. In fact, there has been more than one generation of skim stock that has been used in these tires. It is inappropriate to call it just one skim stock because there's been more than one generation. And I do know there was a cost-cutting program imported from Bridgestone, Japan, called C95, in which they actually took rubber and steel out of these tires during a critical period of their manufacture.
If you know all that, why do you need the formula?
I would like to see if they took materials out of the formula to save money that compromised the safety.
If you already know they did take it out, why not?
I don't know that they took it out of the formula because those documents have never been made available.
If you know they took it out of the tire, why do you need the formula?
Because the tire is the building block, and I do not know, Justice Owen, if they took it out of the formula. We have never seen any documents related to the formula. What I was talking about is tires and materials. I know that they decreased the size of the wedge in the tire. I know they decreased the amount of skim stock that was actually, the thickness of skim stock that was actually applied to the steel belts in the tires. I knew that they, or have seen documents indicating that they did various other things, taking bulk materials out. The formula, we have never seen any documents on.
My point is, if you know all of that, if you know they did those things, why isn't that enough for your experts to opine that's what caused the defect? And what difference does it make that the formula called for those very things?
Because we still go back to the DuPont versus Robinson sample, they have not excluded all of the causes, which include the design defect in the basic chemical formula for the tires. And that's why the question I have for this court is, this is withholding this information here not inconsistent with DuPont versus Robinson? I think the DuPont versus Robinson decision did wonderful things for raising the bar for expert testimony.
Have they ever taken the position that these tire failures are caused by scientific or events that science can't yet figure out? It's just unknown.
I'm not for sure if that particular position has been taken, but I do know that it's never their fault. And Mr. Gardner, who gave the affidavit on their behalf, I took his deposition several years ago in one of the first cases involving ATX tires from the case, before the recall. And Mr. Gardner told me he had basically never seen, had never testified or given the opinion that a Firestone tire was defective. He told me the tire in my case was not defective.
Well, let me ask a question.
But he did tell me about what was going on.
On the Robinson standard, it is true, the expert has to exclude other possibilities. If Bridgestone Firestone stipulates that the skim stock would not be another cause that would have to be excluded by your expert as a cause that was a cause of the defect in here, would you then have any other concern about having to look at the skim stock? You don't have to exclude it as a cause anymore, and they agree, and so all you have to do is focus on what you consider the other design defects of the tire.
Justice Sink, I would have a grave concern because by their very expert getting on the stand and testifying, he's basically representing impliedly to the jury that there's nothing wrong with the skim stock. It's the same issue. If we don't talk about it with the jury, if we don't discuss this issue with them, what are they to believe other than that there is nothing wrong with it?
Your argument seems to be if they deny liability, we're entitled to the formula.
No, Your Honor, that's not what I believe. I believe.
Well, I mean, you keep saying as long as they put up any defense at all, we're entitled to the forfeit.
I think we have an extraordinary set of circumstances in this case, Your Honor, in which the need, because of the massive amount of tires involved, because of the tragedy visited upon the public, and because of the fact that something appears to be wrong, even by their own expert's admission, with this basic building block for the tires. That's why I think it is a particularized need that has been shown in this case that outweighs the risk of harm to Firestone. It's the balancing test. What they would like to do is have a bright line. And it's not that. It is a balancing test which a trial judge has to apply.
You disagree with Ms. Yates that you have to basically say, I don't have a case without this.
Your Honor, if any lawyer that would walk into a courtroom and say that is subject to being sanctioned for filing a frivolous lawsuit. I mean, it's a mousetrap argument. But yet, that's the argument, and Judge Mays asked this very question of Mr. Moran in the argument a year ago in Conroe.
But
and he said,
we
no.
didn't just say relevance. We used the term necessary. And so you're basically making a relevance argument, and we meant something more than that. What is the something more that we meant?
Well, just as I think that what I'm saying is that on the balance that's necessary to a fair adjudication. And I think fairness is a keystone, because fairness is a keystone of the justice system. And the privilege cannot be allowed to conceal a fault of working in justice.
If your experts were saying, you know, we just can't figure out what happened unless we have the skin stock, that would be one situation. But you're telling us we have all this information, your experts do, about what they took out of the tire, what was in the tire that shouldn't have been there. And they opine from all of those facts that the tires were defective and that it was Firestone's fault. I mean, what more do you need? You're talking about now persuasion, relevance, icing on the cake, but not necessity.
The basic design of the tire, and whether there's a design defect in the basic fundamental building blocks of the tire. Why should that be uploaded?
Any other questions?
Thank you all very much.
Ms. Shades, I'll tell you what I'm having trouble with is if the test is necessary to a fair adjudication, seems like you're saying necessary to adjudication. If you've got, well, let me ask it this way. Does your argument rise and fall on whether it's the only way to prove it?
No, truthfully, Your Honor, my argument rises and falls on what evidence they put in front of Judge Mays and the fact that their own experts didn't stand in their affidavits and say what Mr. Pfeiffer's telling you.
Well, okay, but let me just, apart from that.
I do think the only way is a valid way
you
to
think
look
that's
at it.
The
that's
standard.
The way the court looked at it in automatic drilling,
all right.
Which is this court's case.
But what if we said that it's not just dispositive, it's the only way? If we went something a little looser and said there were three ways to do it, would you lose?
I don't think so, because I think that they still, if you say three ways, I mean, I don't know how many pieces of the pie do you want to cut. There are all kinds of ways to prove defect here, because see, what's getting confused?
Let's say we have three ways.
Okay.
And one is the best way.
Mm-hmm.
Then
I do not think they have to have the best way. I would not agree that to necessary to fair adjudication should not mean the best way.
So really you are saying it has to be the only way?
No, Your Honor, because the best way implies that there are other ways to do it. Maybe there's lots of other ways to do it.
But your position is the only way, right? I mean, that's what I thought your argument
was. That's what I'm trying to understand.
It is, Your Honor, that they have other ways to do it. And see, he wants to talk about balancing, but you can't start balancing until he has proof of necessity. And what's getting confused here is this word skim stock. When he says skim stock, that means the rubber compound. Okay, they have lots of the rubber compound. They have lots of it. They have it in millions of return tires, brand new tires. They have all kinds of this rubber compound to analyze. What they want is the formula that goes from the through vulcanization to the rubber compound. So it's not like they can't prove design defect without the formula.
I'd like to go back again to Bridgestone's view, Bridgestone's position that you can do anything you want to with this tire, but it's not going to reveal the skim stock formula. So we now know that there's nothing the experts can do that will reveal this formula.
Right. From the tire itself, you can't reverse engineer.
Let's look at the trial. I'm focusing on the burden that has. So at the trial of the case, the expert gets up there and says, it was the mechanical process that put the tire together. And Bridgestone says, well, here's our mechanical process.
Right.
And the jury concludes that was not faulty. There was no manufacturing defect.
Right.
They say, well, then the gluing process, the thickness of the glue they put in here
right.
was defect. And the expert gets up from Bridgestone and says, nope, that wasn't the defect.
Right.
And so the jury concludes that there was not a gluing defect.
Right. Are you trying to assume there's not a design defect? Because he can prove design defect without the formula.
No, I'm trying to prove what is the evidence that, again, the hypothetical is, let's all of their evidence, they have any number of ways that they argue there's a defect in this, manufacturing and any elements
right.
of design.
Right.
But the one element of design that will never be before the jury,
right.
what happens if that proves to be the defect? I mean,
that's not what their experts are saying.
Well,
their experts are saying in hundreds of cases they're testifying. In fact, we put one of them in tab 7 where their own expert, Dr. Osh, said, if Judge Ramirez doesn't give me the formula, you bet I'm still...
Bridgestone says, well, here's our mechanical process.
Right.
And the jury concludes that was not faulty. There was no manufacturing defect.
Right.
They say, well, then gluing process, the thickness of the glue they put in here
right.
was defect, and the expert gets up from Bridgestone and says, nope, that wasn't the defect.
Right.
And so the jury concludes that there was not a gluing defect.
Right. Are you trying to assume there's not a design defect? Because he can prove design defect without the formula.
No, I'm trying to prove what is the evidence that, again, the hypothetical is, let's all of their evidence, they have any number of ways that they argue there's a defect in this, manufacturing and any elements
right.
of design.
Right.
But the one element of design that will never be before the jury,
right.
what happens if that proves to be the defect? I mean,
that's not what their experts are saying.
Well,
their experts are saying in hundreds of cases they're testifying. In fact, we put one of them in tab 7 where their own expert, Dr. Osh, said, if Judge Ramirez doesn't give me the formula, you bet I'm still going to say this tire's defective. I can opine on design defect and manufacturing defect. For one thing, Judge, they've got the skim stock. See, they have the actual rubber. They know what it looks like and what it feels like and what its chemical composition is after it comes out of vulcanization.
What about when the tire's not available?
Okay, that's, in my opinion, a false argument here, okay? I don't know why the summary judgment was asserted. Maybe there wasn't any evidence of why the accident happened. I don't know that particular case. But the tire not available still allows them to use the root cause studies, as Your Honor suggested, I might argue, and to look at the hundreds and millions of other recall tires, to look at finished, never-used, cured tires that are not defective, that meet all the properties of the tires. In other words, they know what a Firestone tire is supposed to look like. Perfect. Okay,
so
they know what all these other tires in the industry look like, brand new and supposedly
perfect. You're conceding here that you would never be entitled to a summary judgment merely because the tire had been destroyed at some point before the recall.
Chief Justice Phillips, I'm not prepared to answer that question. I don't know what the argument was in the case. You notice he said the MDF, which is the federal cases, is not even this case. But this is, he's right about one thing. This is a critically important case. This is going to decide it not just for the Texas litigation, but across the country, because you know the Arizona courts already said you can't have the skim stock formula, but if the Texas appellate court says you can, I'm going to revisit.
Ms. Yates, if we disagree with you and don't think that necessary means the only way, and instead we agree with the plaintiffs in this case that we have to look at necessary to a fair adjudication and balancing is what happens at this phase,
right.
then why doesn't the protective order that Judge Mays put in place provide all the protection that Firestone needs for its trade secret?
Okay, Judge, because under your
We've got another net underneath
right,
here.
Right. Because under your hypothetical, you've assumed they've reached the next step to balancing. But see, you're assuming it because you're saying, well, I'm going to let them have three ways to do it. You have to do it based on the evidence here, didn't say it was necessary.
I understand, but he has a different interpretation of what necessary for a fair adjudication means to you. You're each putting a different legal
right.
analysis underneath that language.
Right.
If we agree with him
Right.
And we don't think it's the only way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a balancing because we're looking at necessary for a fair adjudication, not necessary to adjudicate.
Mm-hmm.
Then I want to go to the next step, and I want you to tell me if the protective order that's in place here is sufficient to protect Firestone's and Bridgestone's trade secret.
If the protective order, you can't substitute the protective order for the proof of necessity, but if the hypothetical you want to give me is you think they got there on necessity, then I think the protective order, we still have problems with the protective order being sufficient without proof of necessity, because you know Carlson, one of their experts, has already been held in contempt for revealing this stuff. That's the problem with letting the trade secret information get out.
Well, I understand, but there's a different expert who's been designated to, as the one person who would be allowed to look at the formula.
I'm glad you brought that up, Judge. It's a polymer chemist, because the experts that gave these affidavits aren't qualified to study these compounds.
Is that order sufficient to protect the trade secret?
I think as protective orders go, that would be sufficient if you think they already had reached the standard.
One more question. You claim there's tens of millions of tires all in the same skim stock
and
out on the road or in junkyard somewhere.
Right.
And he says, no, there's more than one skim stock. At the very least, if one of the ways you can determine defect is to look at other tires, aren't the plaintiffs entitled to know we have secret formula number one that was used for these tires and secret formula number two for these tires?
Well, Chief Justice Phillip, we'd be happy to tell them this particular type of tire has skim stock number J2, our secret number is J22, but this one is the other number. If you're asking me would we tell them which skim stock was used, But we still wouldn't disclose the actual formula for any of the skim stocks, because for any of the tires, those formulas are trade secrets. And the reason the tire industry fights so hard on this is it's a low-margin industry, and the only way they make money in the industry is to hold on to their secret formulas.
And the trade secret is equally relevant whether or not you're still using that particular skim stock or ever would again?
Yes, and we still...
Such minor
and the undisputed evidence is we are still using this skim stock number. He's right that it's evolutionary, and it's been evolved from one secret number to the next secret number, but we're still using the second number in our tires.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments in today's call. The marshal will return to court.